helped form the thinkers and statesmen who shaped Western civilization. Today, there are over 400 children in four private Regina academies. We are scheduled to open our fifth in September in collaboration with Cardinal O'Hara. It will be called Regina Chesterton Academy at Cardinal O'Hara High School, and it's actually a school within a school, an honors track. We're going to begin with freshmen and sophomores and add a junior class the following year and a senior class in year three. The mission is to help form the leaders of the new springtime, John Paul II's famous new springtime. And I might add that there are two very distinctive features of every Regina Academy. First, the Catholic faith is at the center of everything. It's integrated throughout the entire curriculum, every subject. And each teacher, parent, student, administrator, and board member takes an oath of fidelity to the magisterium of the Catholic Church. In practical terms, this means if the Church teaches it, we teach it. If she doesn't, we don't. The second distinctive feature is the trivium, an approach to learning that adapts the curriculum to the behavioral stages of a student's growth. Children in early grades are taught to consume large quantities of information in different subject areas, and as they get older and begin to question things, they're given the deductive tools of logic and reasoning to help them sort out what is true and what isn't. And finally, once they've consumed the content in different subject areas and reasoned their way through any inconsistencies, they're taught how to own it in prose and rhetoric. In short, the students at a Regina Academy are given lifetime learning tools that will help them pursue the good, the true, and the beautiful throughout the whole of their lives, and to see it and live it through the lens of faith. For more information, please visit our website, www.reginaacademies.com. Now back to our recourse and our guest, Sean Flanagan. Sean, are you with us? Sean, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Brian.
Thank you so much for joining us, Sean. It's wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
I will tell our listeners that this great man has had so much influence on our Knights and so many of us individually. He has really changed the direction of many people's lives, and he has taught us how to witness fearlessly. He is a bold proclaimer of the truth, and he lets the chips fall where they may, a longtime leader, not just in the Knights of the Immaculate, but in various pro-life causes, and a very generous man, by the way. He has helped so many worthy apostolates, small and struggling, to find their feet and their legs underneath them and to be able to move forward and do the work of the Lord in proclaiming the kingdom. So, Sean, it's an honor and pleasure to have you.
Well, it's my pleasure and honor, too, Brian, to be invited on, and thank you.
Sean, we're talking today about the Knights of the Immaculate, and maybe you could just reminisce with me a little bit. That first weekend, 33 years ago, when Father James McCurry asked you and Jim Cash to bring a few of us up to St. Granby, St. Tyasith, I should say. It was a wonderful weekend. It was the first weekend that we actually were consecrated. Maybe you could help our listeners understand the full meaning of a consecration as Father James explained it then.
Well, of course, there were, if I remember correctly, there were six or seven of us on that retreat. It wasn't a huge crowd, and Jim had organized it, Jim Cash, Lord rest his dear soul, and it was a beautiful weekend because we had a marvelous retreat director, particularly Father James McCurry, who really was our founding pastor, as it were, he brought a lot of joy to the weekend, and as you know, his homilies and his way of presenting the gospel is so beautiful. To this day, it rings through my mind all the wonder of how he speaks of the Lord. You know, and that was our beginnings. Where I remember just as I say, a small group, and I remember it so well because of the presence of Jim and you and Bud, and I can't even remember the other people that were there. But I'm sure they're part of our Knights group to this day. But when you think what we've grown to how many, 250, 300 people now, Brian?
There's actually over 800 on our mailing list.
My goodness. our mailing list is over 800. Wow, I didn't realize that.
And when we send out those little MI mini-meds, mini-meditations each day, we have over 1,500 on that list receiving them every day.
Yeah, Well, I was probably thinking more of the numbers that attend our annual retreat at Malvern. It's grown remarkably in the last number of years. But, you know, this is what we've got to do to nurture our faith. I mean, unfortunately, the life of the mind has got to be nurtured if you want to be what you want to be. If we want to be Catholics, we've got to nurture our Catholic faith through you know, all the things that we do, you know, as evangelists. You know, it sounds so grandiose when you say evangelist, but really, all it's very simple. It's just kind of living daily a Catholic life, nothing more, nothing less. If you want to include things like going to daily Mass and perhaps paying the rosary and having moments to stop during the day for the Angelus, noon or 3 o'clock, those are the Catholic hours I always think of, you know.
What do you think the Marian consecration means inherently? What does it mean for a man or a woman to consecrate their lives, their work, their family, everything that they do, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and really to the Sacred Heart of Jesus through the Immaculate Heart of Mary? What's the inherent meaning of that today?
Well, the inherent meaning should be that motherhood itself is not just temporal, that it's eternal. And, you know, I always think of the Hail Mary, because the Hail Mary is probably the greatest prayer in our church liturgy. It's dates back, they tell us, to the early part of the first century, when it was composed in the way it was, because it uses, you know, Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. Those appeal to our mother, our heavenly mother, and it's in every language. I think I read recently that it was in some 200 plus languages. So it's a very special prayer that has lived through the ages. So, in consecrating ourselves to the Mother of God, we make a promise that we live that life to the best of our ability. That is to say, you know, to try and get into a routine. I suppose that's the best way you can talk about it, because you can't be. You can try to be holy all the time, but it doesn't work. You find yourself doing the same things that you wish you didn't do, or say the same things, or have the same attitude towards things that you know that you don't agree with, but you could be a little bit more loving in the way you approach it. But yet we all fail in that area. And but if you have a routine to your Catholic life, you have a greater chance of being good most of the time, and then and being not dishonoring our mother, you know.
You
think of those pugilists that appear on TV of yesteryear, at least, and they would all say, "I did it all for you, Ma." You know, that idea that we're doing it. We don't want to let the Blessed Mother down.
Well, you know, one thing that is not generally understood is that when a knight consecrates himself or herself to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, every single thing he or she does that has merit, eternal merit, is really given up to the Immaculate to use as she sees fit in any way that she chooses, to release grace in whatever quantity, to whatever degree, to whomever she chooses. And as St. Maximilian taught us, when we appear before our judge, we are really empty-handed. There is nothing that we can point to or present as something that we did, because it's all been given away. In that moment, we are trusting, very much like Our Lady trusted. She, as Father Michael Gately says, she hoped against hope. She trusted against trust itself. And we will trust that she will speak up for us. It's a beautiful concept for a knight, isn't it?
Well, absolutely magnificent. Well, it's humbling too. I mean, you know, the whole idea of having an eternal mother is part of God's sublime plan from time immemorial, that this would be the way in which He would capture mankind to see Himself as part of an eternal and ongoing journey after death, with God as our Father, but Mary very much as our mother in the eternal kingdom. Though it's a mystery beyond our ability to discern fully, we know that it's part of God's plan, and therefore it makes you less worried about death, obviously, not that you look forward to it, but that you know that you have at least done your best to live according to that eternal plan.
Hey, Sean, there's a lady by the name of Pat on line one that has a question for you. Would you please take the question? I'm sorry.
I hope I'll be able to answer it.
It's Patrick. I'm sorry, not Patricia. My fault. Patricia, you're on with Sean Flanagan.
Hi, Patricia.
Oh, Patrick, I'm sorry. Patrick, you're on.
How are you doing?
Please forgive me.
We better get the gender right, first of all, right?
I'm listening to the program in my car. And
hello, Patrick, can you are you speaking?
Yes, can you hear me okay now?
A little better, yes.
Okay. I was in my car listening to the program, and your guest made noted about nurturing, our nurturing and our faith and everything. And I just wanted to confirm what he's saying, that I was a fallen away Catholic. I mean, I remained as a Christian, but I grew, but outside of the church. And then when I came back to the church, we had no radio stations. We had very little activity going on to help nurture our faith back into Catholicism, back into with the Blessed Mother. And what he said is so true. I mean, I really, really agree with him, is that we need more and more of the program that you have and you have and your speakers come on to help us to grow. And I just wanted to say that with you, share that with you.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for that. And I know Harry in the engineering room and Kathleen McCarthy, of course, who's the inspiration for all of this, would be most grateful to hear it themselves. But also, it's fitting that you called during Sean Flanagan's appearance on this show, because he is the one that gathered the Knights of the Immaculate here in the Mid-Atlantic States and has really been our leader over the past 33 years. Sean, I have to ask, while I have you on, if St. Maximain Kolbe were alive today, what do you think he'd be doing?
Sean that question?
Yes, Patrick, I am. Thank
okay,
you.
Good.
What do I think he'd be doing? I suppose he'd be as concerned about the future as I am in seeing the assaults on our Holy Church, and probably be in amazement to see history repeating itself. You know, he lived at a time when both Stalin was alive and Hitler was alive, and these men were the great influence of the course of history during the middle part of that century. And he's looking now around and seeing much of the same things kind of developing, the same kind of godlessness. And I suppose he would be just seeking a way to bring people to the truth. And it takes probably what he went through, personal sacrifice. He went through the ultimate sacrifice as a martyr at Auschwitz. We don't have to go that far, but we do have to give of ourselves in ways that makes people see that we really and truly do believe. That lovely phrase that I have become accustomed to using, love builds a bridge over which truth can pass. Mm. I mean, if we do not have love in our hearts, whatever we're doing, it's very hard to get anybody to even listen to us. But if people detect in our own person that we do care about them and about what we're speaking about, then it's much easier to have a listening ear. I think if you don't have that love in your heart, it's very hard to kind of imitate something that you don't believe. Do you know what I mean? It always falls flat. So I think that's the greatest thing, to understand the need to be always loving in our disposition, loving in our approach to others. We are, we're seeing our brothers and our sisters. If we can get that in mind, it's hard sometimes with those we totally disagree with. But that's the hard thing about being called to Christianity, is to try to live that on a daily basis.
Hey, Patrick, I want to thank you for your call.
I agree with what, Sean, what you were just saying about how the love, bridges, is that bridge. And today, it seems like we've taken even gone back farther than Maximilian, because with just the way the culture is, the lack of the morals, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's got to be a lot of love, a lot of bridges starting to be built, because, and I think it's the time is right now that if we really, really, like you're saying, keep, you know, pursue after, you know, the love of the Blessed Mother, her heart, our Lord's heart, to
But above all, Patrick, what we've got to—we've got to use the old cliche. We've got to bloom where we're planted.
In other words,
you would like to have some sort of instant conversion way, but you have to be that person in your own locale, in your home, in your family, in your community, where you have at least some little influence. So, a loving presence is what we really need, and that loving presence doesn't have to say an awful lot. It really is listened to, and when you do have a loving presence, or you give a good imitation of it, then people do listen to you, and that's the main thing. And then if you've got something to say about the Holy Faith, like when people ask me, you know, I've got a big family and a lot of grandchildren and all that sort of thing, and they look and they say, well, how did you do it all? Well, I didn't, except that I had a wonderful mate. Hmm. So there's where it begins. All human history begins with family. When the two become one and become three, that's when human history begins, with the advent of birth. So we must see a way of, even if we have a little despair in our hearts for the present generation, we must see that each new birth is an opportunity. And so we encourage people to see family in the light of the way it was in when I was growing up, you know. We stayed chaste until after a marriage, and we remained chaste basically through our marriage, and that's something that colors the way we see others and we see life, and it colors everything about us. It colors how we speak, how we think, and because we don't want to disappoint our wives or our children, you know, we have all sorts of things that keep us checked. For better and for worse, we don't want to have our children ashamed of us. We don't want our wife ashamed. We want to be the best we can be. That's all I can say. That's what we're called to be.
Beautifully put, Sean. You're very, very active in Right to Life, and have been for a very long time. What do you see as the biggest challenge for the Right to Life movement in America today?
Well, I think, you know, having the slightest knowledge about that coming to be ourselves. I mean, we came to be because we were loved, and so for us now to dismiss that and not to be active in trying to stop the Holocaust. People don't even like to hear it being called a Holocaust. But when you see millions of children never given the opportunity to come to be in the great miracle of existence, it seems to be an obvious thing that you'd want to stop that, And yet they talk about women's rights. Well, everybody has rights, but they have rights before the act that creates the life. That's when those rights have a play. You know, you must think about these things before the action of intercourse that brings about the potential of a child. And if you do that, you're on the road to being a pro-life warrior. Do you know what I mean? Because you don't want to see it happening. I mean, you can't do anything directly about it except try to influence the people that make the decisions on high. Our Supreme Court will be the ultimate ones who should have done things a lot differently. They should never have adjudicated on this matter in the first place. It should have gone, at minimum, it should have been a state's decision. We are, after all, 50 sovereign states, you know, but for a group of men to have adjudicated in this manner is a tragedy. It's a tragedy now for the last 43 years since 1973, and we can be a force for good by just participating to the degree that we can in the pro-life cause, making our voice heard, and of course, above all, in respecting women. You know, the bearers of the child, who bring the splendor of the truth to be. And the truth is that each child is a precious soul for God.
Well, St. Maximilian Kolbe certainly taught us all of that, didn't he, with his great love for the Immaculate. When you read what he wrote, it's apparent that it was this passionate, mad love affair. He just loved this woman. He would do anything for her. In fact, he gave his life for her.
Yeah.
And in so doing, he set the standard for all the rest of us, didn't he? Especially as we head into troublesome waters, right?
Yeah. Well, he stepped forward out of the line of prisoners at Auschwitz to ask the commandant to spare the life of a man who was pleading with him because he had a wife and several children. He said, please, please. And he heard that, and that cry touched his heart, and he stepped forward and he said, let me take his place. And the commandant said, who are you? Well, when he found out that he was a Catholic priest, he was very happy to have him take that man's place, because the Nazis were desperately trying to get rid of Catholic priests particularly. And this was another opportunity to... it's almost unbelievable to think that this was real. But that was a real time in human history, a time that I was alive during that period. I was a young fellow, but it was happening during my lifetime.
Well, his example it just echoes, doesn't it, through the years. St. John Paul II once said privately, I think I heard this, that he thought one of the reasons he was elevated to the papacy was to make the work of the great St. Maximilian Kolbe better known among men.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
when he canonized him, there was some devil's advocacy that he couldn't be canonized as a martyr. But John Paul II, ever the great theologian and philosopher, actually canonized him as a martyr to love. And he said he's the first of our martyrs to love in the 2,000-year history of the Church. And that love that he demonstrated was a direct result of his Marian consecration.
Yep. Yeah, John Paul II was an extraordinary figure of the 20th century. An extraordinary figure. A man who lived through that whole period and lived really in the heart of the beast, in the heart of the belly of the beast, as they say. You know, right in Poland, a land that finally, in the post-war period, regained its name. It had been crushed for the previous 125 years between being where it was geographically and being a deeply Catholic country. It didn't have friends around it to defend it. So it was left alone, and John Paul was the center of it.
You know, Sean, I have to tell you, we're coming down to the last couple minutes. What a surprise when I walked into this radio studio and saw that it is dedicated. It's actually, the work is consecrated in St. Maximilian Kolbe's name to the Immaculate Heart of Mary.
Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't know that, Brian. Oh, that's marvelous.
There's a big statue of St. Maximilian Kolbe. And this network is really greatly influenced by him. Many people don't know he was a great evangelist, you know, with his magazine, his newspaper.
His newspaper was, I think it was a million copies a week or a month. It went all over Poland and all over Europe.
He was a great evangelist, Sean.
Yeah, that's why they wanted to get rid of him. Because the enemies of the Church were alive then and are still alive today. The truth burns their ears and they don't like it.
Well, yeah, he was on the Nazi watch list because of what he wrote and printed and distributed. And they told him to back off, and he did not. And he was arrested and sent to Auschwitz, as you tell the story. And it really is a lesson for all of us, isn't it? Because it's so easy today to just hold our tongue and look the other way. But look at what that has wrought in our world over the last 50 years.
Yeah, but we must see each soul as a. We must have a sense of wonder about the miracle of being, and about all of the incredible advances that have taken place. I mean, I'm talking about scientific advances, of course, too. But with scientific advances, should come a greater awareness of the mystery and the miracle of being. I mean, it should create in us a great joy to know that we're alive at this time, and to know that we can contribute to improving man's condition. And really and truly, the only way we can do that I can see in my own life, looking around me at my over the past many years. It's only through coming to know and love and serve God, and that's, I don't know any other way. And I wish I could tell others of the great joy that my life has had in being Catholic and in being, you know, being dedicated to my faith. That is to say, I didn't do anything extraordinary as far as I'm concerned, other than just lived a Catholic life, a sacramental life, going to Mass, going to Communion, doing the things, raised 6 children, and now we have 30 grandchildren, and I look and wonder in awe at all that has transpired in the course of my lifetime.
Sean, as I've told you many times, you will never know the influence that you have had on so many of us. So many of us who are younger than you, which actually includes pretty much everybody. I think on that note, on that last insult, I think it's time to probably wrap up. I think I'm getting the signal. You will talk. Thank will you, you come back, Sean? We'll talk about other things.
Yes,
I'd love to have you on
indeed.
Again.
I would be delighted to be a part of it. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, thank you, and God love you.
God bless you. Bye.
Okay, we are wrapping up now. Harry's going to give the signal, and we thank you for joining us today. Please remember, in his sign, in your charitable contributions, and please tell everybody about In His Sign Network and all the wonderful shows that are on each and every day and week.
Thank you for tuning in to Our Recourse. We are grateful to our sponsors and to Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign Catholic Radio for bringing this show into your homes and cars. Please remember In His Sign Catholic Radio in your prayers and charitable contributions so we can continue to offer authentic Catholic programming 2 hours every day, 5 days a week. We can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com. Join us next week at this same time for another edition of Our Recourse with Brian Gale.